Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Dr. Robert Peskin, Dr. Raymond Ellis, and Andrea and Ron DeFeo. Transportation network disruptions due to natural hazards such as floods and wildfires can be costly in terms of infrastructure damage and the interruption of essential economic, social, and subsistence functions. Keeping the flow of people and products moving safely is a critical and challenging task. And as these natural disasters become more common, strategies for assuring transportation network continuity and performance have become more important. Today, we're talking with Austin Yates, who's TISMO engineer in District 4 of the Iowa Department of Transportation, to tell us what it's like to be on the front lines protecting the highway network in the face of severe floods. Happy to talk with you today. Austin, tell us what a TISMO engineer is.
It's a mouthful, and that's why we abbreviate it. It's Transportation Systems Management and Operations. And TISMO, that term in and of itself is polarizing on the operation side, because there's a camp that favors saying it, you know, TSMO or TSM&O. I favor TISMO because it's two syllables and it's a lot easier to say.
Okay. So, and this is a really important role for keeping traffic moving in good weather and bad, as I understand it.
Yeah. So TISMO is bringing an operations focus to our transportation network. Basically, you know, bridge engineers can give you, deterioration curves on bridges. Pavement engineers can tell you how long pavement's going to last. TISMO is basically considering mobility as an asset that we can schedule it, we can preserve it, we can protect it, we can, move it, you know, appreciate it, depreciate it, and treat mobility like any other asset that we're used to, like concrete, steel, and asphalt.
Great. Excellent definition. I'm going to put it in my file and I can explain it to other people. So where is your district in the state of Iowa?
I'm in District 4, which is basically the southwest quadrant of Iowa.
And what's there that we should recognize? What are the major places?
I will take this opportunity to brag that we have the most lane miles of all interstate lane miles of all the six Iowa DOT districts. You'll be familiar with Interstate 80, you know, which is a coast-to-coast route from San Francisco to New York City. We also have Interstate 29, which basically goes from Kansas City up to the Pembina border crossing from North Dakota into Canada. And we also have numerous U.S. and state highways that are crucial links of our transportation system. We border the Missouri River, which borders, Iowa borders Nebraska and Kansas and Missouri, kind of all in that area. And we have a lot of critical river crossings as well.
So our paths crossed a year or so ago because of the work that you do in managing the flow of traffic particularly in the face of floods. Is this a common part of your job, and are floods more common now than they were a few years ago?
Yeah, they are more common. And I was, I came on board Iowa DOT in January of 2019. I actually came from Nebraska DOT. I was in a TISMO role, but at a central headquarters. And I moved over to Iowa, came out to the district, and in March 2019 is when the floodwaters started to rise. Previous flood before that was in 2011. It only 8 years in between some pretty major events. Yeah, they seem to be getting more frequent.
What's the nature of the work that you do as that kind of a natural disaster starts to come at you and you're aware of it?
The first thing we're doing is getting, you know, basically patrols set up to keep watch on where the water is and where it's encroaching on the roadway. We have a really good camera network in Council Bluffs, but outside of Council Bluffs, it's, you know, now we're filling in our camera network, but it's just basically keeping eyes on where the water is, as well as the rate that it's going up. So, you know, our daily lifeblood of information was the stream hydrographs from National Weather Service, who, you know, they're tied in with a bunch of other data sources like the USGS stream gauges and everything. But using the National Weather Service hydrographs, which has, you know, measurements as well as projections, but all of that, all the projections can very easily go out the window when you have something like a levee breach, when you lose protection, or not even a breach, just an overtopping. So everywhere, you know, all of our modeling of where filling in and what's going to be flooding kind of in what order, you know, it's a good first start, but it can easily, you know, we have to be able to pivot very easily based on where we lose protection and where the water is going to go. You know, our maintenance crews have a real good idea of, if you consider one single interchange, they have a pretty good idea of where the water is going to go on a very local level, but it's kind of that regional level that really depends. What was very unique, you know, as soon as the flood water started, most people were comparing 2019 floods to 2011. So the 2011 flood was caused by basically late season snows and snow melt in the Dakotas and Montana, like the upper Missouri basin. So in order to protect the dams and reservoir system, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers had to let water out of the reservoir system, which caused the flood in the lower Missouri basin. Contrast that, to 2019, which was primarily a tributary flood, like not the Missouri River itself. It was high flows and high water in the tributary system that comes in below the main stem reservoirs and dams on the upper Missouri River. So that was when we were seeing floods on, for instance, the big and Little Sioux River in northern Iowa, as well as the Platte River, which drains, you know, I mean, it starts in eastern Colorado and drains much of southern and central and as well as eastern Nebraska. So the Platte River flows, the Platte River enters the Missouri River just south of the Omaha Council Bluffs Metro. And there was actually, you know, about a 12-hour period where the Platte River flows were actually higher than the Missouri River flows. And that caused a lot of headache for us.
So tell us about, what are your tools? When you see this coming, what actions can you take?
Number one is start pre-staging traffic control devices. When we know we're going to have to close a road, we want to get all the barrels and barricades and cones and everything all ready to go.
You talked about communicating with the online navigation services like Waze and Google and other kinds of things. Are you partners with them, or are they helpful to you, or are they sometimes troublesome in terms of the information they give drivers?
Well, definitely troublesome for, you know, at the highest level. But I will say Waze is a fantastic partner. For several years now, we have had automatic two-way hands-off data sharing between our 511 system and Waze. So if somebody on Waze, you know, a Wazer, they call them, if somebody, you know, using the Waze app while they're driving, they see a stalled vehicle, they put it in, there's an authentication algorithm that goes over to our 511 provider who has a secondary authentication algorithm, and then that'll just show up on our 511 system.
One of the concerns that I have is that if there's a segment of roadway is flooded, what prevents Waze from sending me down that segment?
So Waze specifically, because they are a fantastic partner, and we have, you know, their area data manager, you know, I have on speed dial. We routinely talk to each other about what's going on. With Waze, we can say, you know, this is closed. and they can manually put that into the Waze network. But something like Google or Apple, which we have a relationship with them, but it's usually if we're it's not real time. It's mostly like map updates, like, oh, we have, you know, this new on-ramp is now exists. That's kind of our relationship with Apple and Google. So that was a very common problem during the 2019 flood. People getting routed with Google or Apple, or the biggest issue we had was with in-car navigation, because those are definitely not live maps. People, you know, getting right up to our closure point saying, well, this says to go this way. All right, good luck. There's, you know, 7 feet of water over the interstate. So that was a very common problem, and we exercised as much influence as we could. Specifically, Waze is kind of the way we can influence Google. Waze is owned by Google, so we can, you know, we can make sure something is correct in Waze, and then at which point it usually shows up on Google Maps in a matter of minutes. But then we get into things like when, you know, we close the interstate, you know, at a logical point where there's services where you can stay, you know, get back on the interstate system. So, you know, we will occasionally close portions of the interstate that actually, you know, aren't underwater. But what happens is, as contractors, whether it was our own contractors or contractors working for the railroads or contractors working for the Corps of Engineers, their vehicles driving get picked up by the probe data providers like Enrix and HERE and Google and getting all those data streams. So we will have a road that is genuinely closed, but there is moving traffic on it. So it shows up, you know, the closure comes off of Google because they're picking up moving vehicles. So that was a routine problem that we had, with once we had contractors working in the area.
Yeah. So they're picking up the service vehicles and it looks like the road is open when the road is closed. Also, if I understand correctly, what you try, if you need to close the road, you want to close it at a natural junction point. So drivers have an option when they get to that closure.
Yeah. I mean, we have several interchanges in Southern Iowa that serve, you know, communities and that's it. Like there's not even a gas station. So that was one, you know, like I said, that kind of influences our decision for logical places to close the road.
So what kind of planning do you do in advance? So you've got a variety of agencies that you work with, including agencies, your sister agencies in other states. Do you do long-term planning to say this is how we're going to operate in this kind of case, or this is how we're going to pre-deploy resources? That is when the weather is good and the floods aren't there yet?
I mean, kind of the crux of that, the basis of that is our traffic incident management plans. That's our TIM, traffic incident management. So we have pre-planned diversion routes for pretty much every segment of interstate. And that's the basis for determining where we're going to send people, who we need to reach out to, county sheriffs, county emergency management, other states, those kind of public safety partners. And, you know, that's the first thing we look at when there's a threat to have to close the road is, you know, what's our pre-planned diversion route and what kind of shape is that diversion route in?
So you've got those pre-planned routes in the file and you can pull them out when you need to. Is that fair?
Absolutely.
Does the experience that you have in the O in TISMO, the operations end of it, does that feed forward into actions to build resilience into the network so that the next time you get a flood, some segments of the roadway are not flooded?
Yes, absolutely. With the case of 2019, mostly seeing what we could improve afterwards to build in resiliency, like raise up, you know, do some grade raises in some strategic places. But not even just with floods, just with maintenance of traffic and mobility in general, one thing we've started doing is, like, anytime we build a crossover, if we have to run, you know, head-to-head traffic on the interstate, leave that crossover. You know, usually it's removed as part of the wrap-up of a construction project. But like, if we're doing bridge work or something, at some point, what we're getting to is we want to have crossovers on both sides of every bridge that we can get them on there. So if there is a crash or construction or any sort of incident, you know, on a bridge or anywhere, we can move traffic very quickly and easily between the two directions.
So that's really building flexibility into the network.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yes, that makes complete sense. I mean, we saw some incidents during the wildfires in the West where a solid concrete median barrier prevented vehicles from turning around and trapped them in the fire zone.
Right, yeah, and we don't want to have a condition like that.
So are you getting the climate is moving in some challenging directions. Are you keeping up? Are you getting ahead of it?
Yeah, as much as we can, absolutely. From the whole spectrum of just getting more sensors out there so we can keep, you know, whether it's like an ARWIS, roadway weather information system, we can have a higher density of climate data or stream gauges, as well as having, flood sensors, getting more granular data so we can have, you know, more data points that we're plotting and that we can see where things are trending. So that's, you know, sensors on one end and then, you know, concrete, steel and asphalt and lane miles and on the other end. And we're doing that wherever we can, wherever practical.
So I'm feeling better about this, Austin, because it sounds to me like the data opportunities, the data availability is changing. You're building flexibility into the system, and you've got strong coordination across agencies to help us manage and get ahead of these natural disasters. I thank you very much. I'm really glad to have the opportunity to talk with you and to learn about what you're doing and keep doing it. And we appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk to you.
Thank you very much. Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please subscribe to our podcast and encourage your friends to join us too. The Infrastructure Show is recorded at the Studio Media Recording Company in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Scott Steinman, recording engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I am Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.